Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of June 17th, 2018. Today we're joined by our frequent guest, the prolific commentator, Ms. Mariah Tinger. How you doing, Mariah?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Very well, very, very well. So tell me, Mariah, what's hot this week? What do you think? What's a fit topic for our consideration?
Well, I don't know about you, but every time I pick up my phone dings with a news topic, it's, you know, this summit, this meeting between Kim Jong-un and President Trump about the nuclear
stuff.
Disarmament and so on and so forth. And okay, all right, all that's happening. Of course, what's remarkably interesting about that and also remarkably disturbing is that Trump has never appointed a science advisor or senior counselor trained in nuclear physics for any of his talks with Kim Jong-un.
Because he's just going with what feels good, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's not like it's rocket scientists. It's just nuclear physics. How hard could it be? Right? Everybody can do that in their sleep. Come on. There's this big problem with the science, obviously, in this country, which is something we've given a lot of talk to in general. But I just am noticing this trend where the world is moving forward on climate change, and we are constantly, we're just getting left in the dust.
Well, there was some article in the New York Times recently, right, that basically said that, you know, pointing out that Trump has not brought in any kind of serious scientific advice, and in fact, generally speaking, he doesn't like advice at all, right?
I mean, and you know, so then what ends up happening is that a lot of the government scientists are watching their work be suppressed, mm-hmm. and they're leaving. They're, you know, flying out of there to find jobs in the private sector, or, to be honest, to find jobs in other countries. We're losing all of these talented, very top high level scientists, because they're going somewhere else where they're especially their climate science is respected and is being put into place. Mm-hmm. France actually has a whole campaign called Make Our Planet Great, which they have created, you know, in reference to the Make Our America Great, Make Our Planet Great, where they're actually luring scientists to France. You know,
really?
We've talked about this on our show, of course, but where they're basically saying, you know, hey, okay, so America is not respecting your science. We will. And guess what? That means that all of the fantastic science, climate science innovators and all of the leading technology, it's going to end up elsewhere.
That sort of brain trust moves overseas, and the locus of that sort of research is somewhere else, and it benefits the other country. It would benefit France.
Yeah, right, exactly, yeah. Exactly. So that's going to, you know, leave us way behind in terms of the advancements and being a global leader. It's happening. There's also the Pope Francis came out, and the Pope is saying climate change is a challenge of epochal proportions.
So tell me, my understanding is that he called into the Vatican oil executives, right? I mean, talk about a man of the 21st century, right? He had a conference. He sent some cardinal out to round up the CEOs of various oil companies, had them all come into the Vatican, and he gave him a talking to, apparently,
yes,
right?
Right. Asset manager from BlackRock, BP, and Norwegian oil and energy company Equinor, among others. I'm pretty sure that BlackRock, the asset manager from BlackRock, is very forward thinking and pushing pretty strongly for being aware of some of these things, such as climate change, and are basically sort of more humanitarian causes.
I saw that. So correct me if I'm wrong. I don't know the guy's name, but BlackRock is an investment sort of hedge fund, right? So they have millions to billions of dollars that they invest in companies. And they recently, 2-3 months ago, said that they were going to start looking at the social benefit of the corporations they invest in, and that was going to be one of the criteria. So to your point, yeah, they're very forward thinking, and they're quite influential because they have, they have a lot of money to throw around, and they, I guess, are choosing not to necessarily follow the neoliberal agenda of the bottom line is the only thing you pay for with your money, right? Is that there are other goods that can be obtained I mean, other societal benefits that right. can be obtained from investment in these corporations. They want to look for that.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, I think even they're really pushing for social responsibility and saying we won't invest in you if you're not going to show us, you know, some good social responsibility.
Maybe the Pope gave him a special blessing. Put his hand on his forehead and say, God bless you, my son.
That's right.
But I mean, I find it remarkable that the Pope is so frank and outspoken on these topics in ways that popes, I mean, historically, right? But I mean, other popes have been, they sort of hide in complex language and put out encyclicals that are basically incredibly, well, they're all thought out, but incredibly so over wordsmithed as to say nothing. Whereas this guy, Pope Francis, just gets up and he calls it like it is, which is refreshing.
Also not only calls it like it is, but really draws a very strong line between what good Catholics are passionate about in his mind, which is eliminating poverty and hunger and caring for those who are, you know, facing big challenges, and climate change, and saying, if we really do want to live our values, one of the things we need to do is to, and I'm putting words in his mouth, but one of the things we need to do is to not destroy civilization by continuing on the path we're going with climate change. You know, if we care about people, we need to take care of climate change.
Well, I mean, that's an interesting point, because what the Pope's stance is basically sort of changing the dialogue to an explicitly moral, ethical, right, wrong discussion of the implications of climate change, right? Whereas a lot of times what you see is a polar bear, say, oh, climate change, polar bear, or a picture of the Earth with a blanket around it and a thermometer, and the Earth's feeling a little sick. The Pope's basically calling out the clear moral imperative based on the inevitability of the science. And that is a connection that is worth, I think, just being more clear about. Right?
Well, even if you look at Puerto Rico, right? I mean, so one of the things that the Pope mentioned in one of his talks was that global issues like poverty are interconnected to concerns about global warming and access to electricity. Mm-hmm. If you think about Puerto Rico, where I don't think the number is as high as it was quoted in the T.H. Chan mm-hmm. public mm-hmm. health report that came out, which said there was, you know, I think 40. It said that, I think the media misinterpreted that study. It said it was between like 800 and 4,600 deaths could be attributed to climate change, to the Hurricane Maria. But I think at the very least, we know that hundreds have died. I think the general assumed number is somewhere around 800, and so hundreds of people died because of in a lot of ways, because of access to electricity, where there was no renewable electricity, certainly, and they lost their medicines or their dialysis machines mm-hmm. didn't mm-hmm. work, or all of these sort of associated things that come from not having your basic needs being able to be met. And that interconnectedness is, he considers part of his domain.
Yeah. I guess that's another interesting point. It's almost like, you know, electricity is the quality of life that is available through electricity, because of the ubiquity of electrical power opportunities, becomes almost a moral right, right? To not have electricity is to be condemned to a kind of lifestyle and a denial of things like dialysis machines, right? That is, yeah. that is amounts to an immoral or highly unethical kind of circumstance, or certainly incredibly unfair and unequal.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, one of the things he said was civilization requires energy, but energy use must not destroy civilization. And that's a salient point. We do depend, our life does depend on energy. We do need it. There's no question that fossil fuels have gotten us in a lot of good ways to where we are today, but we are completely dependent on them. And we should be moving towards renewable energy as fast as we can.
Well, and that's in. So one day I'm going to make the podcast that I keep thinking I want to make. But Dave Roberts at Vox talks about the necessity of, I mean, his his blog begins with electrify everything. That is to say, we should not use natural gas to cook our food or to dry our clothes, which of course I still do. But I mean, the point being that if everything was electrical and everything could be electrical and that electricity came from green sources, you have all those energy services. Literally, you get all the quality of life in a green way. And that part of the strategy of a society in transitioning away from fossil fuels is to electrify all of the services now so that you never have to burn a flame anywhere, right? Your car is electric, your kitchen's electric, everything's electric, and that can then be made clean.
Right, yeah. We are actually in the process of ditching our propane burner in favor of electric induction in our kitchen.
Oh, really?
Which is an exciting step. Yeah.
Wow,
but I think a lot of people will respond to that and say, yeah, but if you electrify everything, you're still using fossil fuels. And what people don't realize is that's the first step, right? You get everything electrified. It actually also makes the whole system much more efficient in general. Mm-hmm. And then after you have everything electrified, you start just slowly moving away, which we're doing, right? We have
or in parallel, even in parallel.
Right,
you say you electrify everything and you try and get as many as much green energy on the grid as you can, right?
Right, exactly. Yep. In lockstep with it.
So tell me this. The other, speaking of Singapore and all kind of stuff going on over there with dear leader, I can't decide which dear leader I'm referring to, but the two guys in Singapore. Just prior to that, the United States had a debacle up in Canada, right? Our guy went up and threw a few hand grenades, insulted our dearest friends, and then left early.
I don't know a ton about it, but it definitely sounds like he didn't do a whole lot to make our international reputation strong, that's for sure. But right, so there was the meeting of the G7 leaders in Canada, Canada, France, Germany, Italy, Japan, the UK, and the EU all agreed on the importance of carbon pricing and a just transition to clean energy, and all, of course, reaffirmed their commitment to the Paris Agreement. And as can be imagined, Trump said no, not interested in the Paris Agreement, and refused to even attend a scheduled session on climate change. Right. And Emmanuel Macron said, well, on the climate, we have an ambitious position at 6 without the United States. We're going to move on without the United States. We don't need them. We can still do our good work and leave the United States in our dust.
Which is a remarkable circumstance, right? That the leading liberal democracies of the world to get together and our guy thumbs his nose at him and they say they still continue to pursue the climate agenda. Now, I don't think the climate agenda was the highlight of the meeting, but it's certainly true that the end result of the thing was that the 6 other states that you listed up are still pursuing the climate, the Paris Accord, even in spite of the guy that we have.
Yeah, well, and so the big thing was this photo that Angela Merkel released, and it's hysterical. Trump looks like, it's not hysterical, it's sad. He looks like a defiant toddler sitting there with all of the parents saying, what are you doing? You are making a really big mistake. And he's saying, I'm not going to do this.
Get my arms folded. I am not. I didn't do anything wrong.
I refuse to do what you want me to because I don't want to. And you can't make me.
I'm sure everyone has seen that picture. The caption I saw like the best was the one that has Angela Merkel leaning over and say, okay, Donald, what has Vladimir got on you?
Right.
Oh, God. Well, it is good to see that I believe in my heart and in I hope in my soul that when Donald Trump ends up in Leavenworth prison, that the United States will try to navigate back towards respect in the world and do the right thing. But I can certainly see from the perspective of the European Union or China or all these other people how bipolar the United States appears to be. Right? We go from Barack Obama, who was trying to do the right thing, and I think everyone, you know, around the world generally thought we were in sync. All of a sudden, boom, we're going to go off with crazy man Trump, and we do all this crazy stuff. And then in 4 years, I mean, I hope and pray we get back to someone who's sane. But, I mean, the people in the rest of the world must be looking at it and say, why can't the United States get on an even keel and reach some sort of stability? I don't know.
I know. I just hope our allies will take us back. Right?
Yeah, man. I would be surprised if, I mean, the kind of damage he's doing will take a generation to recover and to rebuild the trust that the United States isn't going to swerve from guardrail to guardrail and do these crazy things as each new administration comes in. That's why somebody that I met, a guy named Nathaniel Stinnett, said that the highest form of environmental citizenship is to vote, and that everyone should prepare to go to the polls. It's going to be a historic event, and that we all ought to get there to the polls to participate in what will be a historic election.
Right. He said everyone is all the environmentalists that care will be at the polls. I don't know that he said that exactly, but
so if you're out there and put on your party hat and get ready to go vote in November, because we are going to be there in droves. You don't want to miss out. All right, so we got to put it down there, Mariah. Let me tell everyone who's listening that they will put up links to most of what we talked about at the blog, which is at massclimateaction.org/blog. We'll put up the link to the blog on our Facebook page, right, which is /massclimateaction. If you like Facebook better, you can wend your way back and listen to the blog from that direction. You can listen to the show directly on your smartphone using Stitcher or TuneIn Radio or Overcast or SoundCloud, et cetera, et cetera. Most of those downloadable podcast apps we're on. And of course, we're on Apple Podcasts, so please rank us and give us a review. So we'll close the way we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, because we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the reckless policies of the Trump administration not be accepted as normal, and that the United States put a long-term and equitable price on carbon. So Mariah, thanks so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks to everyone for listening. We'll talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.
Very cool.